going on, y'all? And thanks so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, I'm not in here alone. The master of disaster, the D20 himself, Mr. Kyle Fels.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here at Skeleton Studios on a beautiful April day, getting ready for Easter.
Yep, Easter weekend rolling up on us.
Yeah, I know the kids are going to be having off for a couple days, you know, with Good Friday and everything coming up and the Easter holiday. And then, of course, everybody's going to in-laws.
Oh, yeah, we got
like
big plans. We got birthday parties and everything this weekend. Right? So, yeah, it'll be madness. But, hey, the weather's good. We're not quite as, like, dying from allergies, although it's not completely gone away because the oak pollen's still out here beating us over the head. But other than that, everything's great.
Everything's good, man. I got a couple of barbecue places I want to check out.
Oh, word?
I've been wanting to go to for a while. There's this new one I sent you about a couple months ago called Goldie's.
Yeah.
They're only open, like, on the weekends. I think the line's pretty long.
We got to go about 5 in the morning, sit in the front yard. What, are we at Franklin's again?
It's kind of like that, yeah.
Dude, how long has it been? What, were we kids?
Yeah.
Jesus, we weren't even 25. I mean, like, it's been forever.
Yeah, I won't do that now. There's no reason to wait that long.
No.
Because you know what? I mean, as good as it is.
Because I can go to Derek Allen's or I can go to Himes. Why am I pointing? Nobody can see it but you. Where am I pointing at? I'm pointing back over to Fort Worth.
Terry Black's is really good. Yeah, I like Himes. Yeah. Himes is probably my favorite.
And it's coming here.
I know. I can't wait. It's going to be bad. Like my
addiction. We're going to have to do, here's what you do. You just start paying them monthly fees, and it just goes to the credit of how much you're going to spend every time you go in there.
Those bacon burn-ends, man. It's like candy. It's like candy. Mm. And even the collard greens are pretty good. And like, I really don't care to eat those most places, but the way they do it, it's amazing. The mac and cheese, green chili mac and cheese.
And I hate green chili.
If you can't tell, folks, we're recording this about lunch because like all I can talk about and think about is food. I'm salivating now.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's happened. Yeah, 100%. But everything else, man, we've been rocking. Hope all of y'all are doing great. The weather's getting good. So everybody gets to kind of at least here in the States, everybody gets to kind of get outside. So, I mean, heck, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for the weather, you know, for us to go do some stuff outdoors. We got, again, a lot of stuff we're changing and playing up to now. Like, we got a lot of plans coming up this summer.
Me and Little Fizzy, we went and watched the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
It was pretty good.
Is Jim Carrey still in it?
Yeah.
That may be his last one. I think I read somewhere he's done. He's retiring. He's finished with it.
I don't blame him.
But you think about it, like, I'm with you. He's been at it for so long. Wow, and he's also notoriously one of those people that doesn't like fame. So I don't blame him one bit. You know, stop and go spend some time with your kids and your family or whatever you want to do for you. You don't got to keep doing that. But that may be one of his last ones.
Yeah, well, I know at the very end there, spoiler alert, y'all. I know it's a new movie.
Yeah, oh, here, but, turn off. Okay. Really mute in 5, 4. Okay, go.
What I'm going to say, I won't give away any secrets other than at the very end they leave they let you believe that there's going to be an up and coming episode. So I don't know if Jim Carrey's going to be in that or not.
I got you.
But there will be another Sonic the Hedgehog. So, you know, Little Fizzy, he loved it. Of course, we were texting each other yesterday.
Yeah.
Little Fizzy keeps asking, what are we doing in Cryptid Classroom? The fans, they want me back. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes on YouTube and reads the stuff. You know, I don't ever read
you
that stuff.
You folks better be careful what y'all write on YouTube. Little Fizzy's going to be keeping an eye out for you.
He keeps an eye on it. He's like, man, look, Dad, they want me back.
Well, we are doing more. I've got more plans. It's coming.
So he's excited about that.
Good. I need my hype man. He's the best hype man in the business.
Right. Speaking of your band, though, Trash Bag Duendes.
Yeah.
The stories keep coming in. Now, this one, it's similar to the Trash Bag Duendes, but it's not exactly the same. But I appreciate people sending these in. Anyways, this one comes from our friends from across the pond. Check this out. It says, hi, I was interested in the morphing bag stories that you guys have been covering. I do have a story I felt was similar in some ways. I wonder if you would think so, too. I have sent this story out before in the past in hoping of hearing something similar. Now, way back in the early 80s here in the UK, I had moved back home for a little while. Not too thrilled to have to share a bedroom with my sister again. Well, one night, after I'd settled into bed for sleep, my sister came in. She turned the light on and was telling me that she had a really weird experience while out with her boyfriend. I always remembered this story as I felt it was the most dumb story ever. I'm open-minded and interested in strange and scary stuff, but not this story. My sister told me that her and her boyfriend had parked up in a nearby country lane that ran alongside some high hedges and trees separating the road from a canal. It would have been dark except for the glow from a nearby overhead motorway bridge lights. The parked car had suddenly jolted and the boyfriend told her to look out of the window on his side of the vehicle as a black large blob was moving out from under the car into the road. Now, as this black blob came out, it began to take the shape of what she described as a large black cat, panther-like, or perhaps a large dog, whichever. It had a long tail that snaked side to side. As this creature came properly into view, she said it would have been far too large to have been under the car in the first place. The black animal walked steadily ahead of the car, and then in one swift movement, it stood up on its hind legs and morphed into a man. A man wearing a long trench coat.
That's a man, baby.
What she described was a trilby hat with shoulder-length hair protruding. The man then walked towards the car with his hands out in front of them as though he was gesturing that not to worry, he wasn't going to hurt them. The boyfriend, of course, revved up to the engine and sped off. Now, they sped down the lanes heading to a large motorway roundabout that was always well lit and generally had police cars parked there watching the traffic. They planned to go there and tell the police what they thought they had just seen, and they were going to tell them that they clipped this man just so that they would go and check out the area. But they didn't want to tell them, you know, what they actually saw. It turns out, on this occasion, there was no police cars parked up there that night. And of course, there were no mobile phones back then. She said they had a scary drive through the lanes to get home. I listened, but I was in no way taken in by this story. Now, by 2004, I was working for MenCap as a support worker. Some of my colleagues were very into the supernatural, as I was. I came across a guy teaching dowsing and at a local pub where we all decided to go once a week for an evening out. Now, back at work, the day after one such evening out, in the kitchen, a colleague and I were chatting about scary experiences, which then turned into stories that we would not believe. I, of course, told her the story about my sister and how the story that she told me all those years back. I had just reached the part of the story where the cat thing walked into the road ahead of the car as another colleague came into the kitchen. Now, this colleague had only just turned 20 years old. She stopped me and asked, "How did you know about that?" Now, I presume she must have thought I was talking about the black cat sightings, the Beast of Bodmin Moor, and all of that. I told her that I was not talking about black cat sightings. She said, "No. It was a man. It turned into a man and approached the car. He had long hair and a long coat and a hat." So, of course, I was really shocked. She wasn't even born when this happened. How the hell could she know, and how often would a story like that even go around? I told her that this was a made-up thing from my sister way back in the early 80s, and she said, "No. This happened 6 months ago here in Hereford. It happened to my boyfriend and his friends parked in a lane in daylight sharing joints. They made a pact never to tell anyone as they will not be believed." Her boyfriend confided in her and she was shocked that, as she thought, one of them, she was just as shocked as I was when I first heard the story. So on arriving home from my shift, I called my sister and I told her all of this. She told me that she always knew that I didn't believe her. As I told my sister on the phone, my daughter came down the stairs. So I told my sister that we'll have to change the conversation. My daughter said, "I know what you two are talking about. It's that stupid story that guy at the outdoor center on the Malvern Hills was telling me in my class on the night walk, trying to scare us about the big black animal that turns into a man." This outing with her school was a fortnight before this was discussed at my job. Thanks, Karen.
Who?
So I don't know if this falls in the trash bag to Wendy, but it does kind of. I mean, like, yeah, this blob, like I think of the movie Spawn, you know, comes out and, yeah, morphs into a cat or a large dog, then stands up on his hind legs and morphs into a man. But this man knew that they were watching because he was motioning to them, "Not to worry, I'm not going to hurt you." And then just kind of moved off.
You remember in the movie Ghost, whenever those shadows morph into those things, yeah, and drag him into the pits of hell, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly.
That's what I thought about as it's turning into the cat and then turning into the man to walk away. These are all related. There's something definitely going on with these kind of sightings. It's surprising that more people have not had these kind of encounters or reported these kind of encounters.
Well, they are now. reporting them.
We're getting a bunch. Like, it's like you told me, we were texting the other night and you were telling me, you're like, man, we are getting tons of these. Like, there is a lot coming in every week of some strange sightings that this has been happening. And do you think the reason it wasn't spoken about or talked about as much is because it's easy to dismiss because it looks like a trash bag or a shadow, or it's easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Because you think about this. You've been to the lake, to the ocean. You ever been in the lake and see like a let's say an empty ice bag, like somebody filled their cooler and it blew out and then it blows in the water and it looks almost jellyfish-esque, right, the way it moves. When you see it move like that out of the water, which is what a lot of these stories sound like, that's when the high strangeness picks up, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Because trash bags only move a certain way, the same as like tumbleweeds. Like, they move a certain pattern, like we've talked about with not deer. When you pick up that pattern difference, that's the way these are with these shadow things or these trash bag dwindies. Whatever it is, they don't move like they're almost everything else, what fills the fae. It's almost perfect. But that one little bitty bit can't break through the uncanny valley. They're not quite 100% with it.
People notice it.
Yes.
And like so many of the stories, the fae notice them noticing them.
Yeah.
Which I think is bizarre.
What I like is him motioning like, y'all are fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to hurt
you. I'm not here looking for you. Right? Like, I'm here doing something else.
But doing what?
That's none of their business.
I know.
That's his business.
And what's up with the hat? Why do they always wear a hat?
They're bald.
You know, like if you go back to like the 60s and earlier, everybody wore hats.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about hats, not like ball caps. Now like people wear fedoras, ball caps and stuff. Yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, ball caps were never really a big thing.
Not only if you were playing baseball.
Yep, yep. And then it was always because of, and maybe we should do that. We ought to actually do a little side thing of the history of hats, right? Because, I mean, truly, it is really interesting.
Well, we've all gotten lazy with our dress. I mean, if you go back to the 60s and earlier, everybody wore suits. That's what you wore. There were no, you didn't wear
windpants
and a t-shirt.
I may have mentioned before, I can't think of many times in my life that I saw my grandfather not in slacks and a button-up shirt.
Yeah.
And if we went out anywhere, it didn't matter if he was going to dinner, to church, to the store, anywhere, he wore his jacket.
Yeah.
It's just what he put on. It was the way he, of course, it was always, you know, with the military background of it. Like, he followed a strict set of rules for 88 years of his life, right? Like, that's what he did. But as I knock over, you know what? iPads, you don't need them. Take that.
He knocks over the iPad.
Oh, I did it again.
You need help?
I'm new here, guys. Yeah, I need a lot of help. Oh, speaking of, y'all know I love headlines, right?
Yeah.
How about this, brud? Tall, red-eyed, mantis-head, winged cryptid observed on Elk Grove Village, Illinois roof.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a mouthful, a lot, right? This happened, all right, April 9th, 2022. Yeah, this is recent, folks. This is real recent. Manuel Navarrete at the UFO Clearinghouse. This is the dude that's got this, okay? Get a load of this. Took place, like I said, around the time, 2300, Elk Grove Village. This is what went down. Listen, it says, we were at my niece's birthday party and I joined some family members outside for a drink and to smoke a cigarette. Here we go again, y'all. We were standing behind the garage when my cousin got everyone's attention and pointed towards the neighbor's garage. There, on the top of the neighbor's garage, was what looked like a really thin man, except he was hunched over and had extremely long arms, freakishly long arms that he was propping himself up with. He stood there, hunched over on his knuckles, looking at us with these bright red glowing eyes that didn't blink. He had a pair of large wings that seemed to come out of his back and were slowly moving. It looked like he was slowly moving them up and down while he stood there staring at us. We were about 50 to 60 feet away from this thing, but we could still see it from where we were standing. He shifted up and down, almost like he was examining us and trying to figure out who or what we were, as curious about us as we were of him. There were seven of us out there, and all of us had a good view of this thing as it stood there on top of the next-door neighbor's garage. My two younger female cousins were saying that they were scared of this, calling it a demon. Their father, my uncle, kept telling them that they were going to be okay as long as they stayed by him and the group. It stood there looking at us for what seemed like 30 seconds before it started flapping its wings, jumped off the garage, and flew away. It looked extremely tall and thin, like it was all skin and bone, and weighed less than I did, and I'm petite, like half the size of my cousins, and used to get teased about it growing up. But this creature looked like it was even thinner than I was. It looked like a tall version of those starving children that you see on the news every once in a while. It was grayish black, and it had a head that looked like it was shaped kind of like a praying mantis.
Ugh.
Except it had glowing red eyes that never blinked, not even once. When it jumped off the garage roof, it made my cousins and even my uncle scream as it flew off and over the trees in the backyard of my grandmother's house. Then it was gone. I know we'd been drinking during the party, but no one was drunk. Hell, not even tipsy. And I know we all saw the same thing, which means unless we were all seeing things, this thing was really there. When we went inside and told the others, my mother and grandmother both thought we were all joking. But when they saw that we were all scared and that we were all saying the same thing, well, they started to believe us. My grandmother and grandfather both said that it could have been La Lechuza, and that we were lucky nothing happened to us. I'm not sure what we saw was La Lechuza, but when I got home and did some research and then sent my family members screenshots to the links to the sightings, it's something for us all to think about.
Man.
Now, wild?
That is
so
wild.
Again, now, first of all, we're smoking, right? Everybody's smoking. We've talked about this. Something about catching it in the outside, having a stogie, you know, that you'll see these strange and weird things. Seven people watch this thing. What is one thing that seven people, it's 50 to 60 feet, could mistaken for a skinny demon with wings?
I don't know.
Because it doesn't exist unless it's a skinny demon with wings.
Yeah, and you said Illinois?
Mm-hmm.
Why is there so many of these flying things seen in and around Chicago?
Dude, I don't know. I do not know why Illinois is popping off with these crazy flying demons.
You know, I've been to Chicago a couple times. I wished I would have taken the time to look around.
Well, like I told you when my niece lived there, right?
Yeah.
When she lived there and the whole thing, and we were doing all these flaps and she was talking about it. I need to ask her some more, at least tell her some more about it all, because every now and again she'll ask, like, is it still happening? And I'm like, yeah, actually, it is still happening. It is complete madness and what's there. Folks, and speaking of complete madness, if you like the stories of the strange and unusual and you want to hear some cool stuff about some orbs, we'll stick around after the break. I'm going to be discussing ghost lights that's pretty close to where we are right now, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. So what we're going to be discussing today is something that I didn't realize. I didn't realize we had so many hotspots for it, I guess, right here close to us here in Texas. So many that Kyle and I have been discussing actively about going and checking these out. And what I'm talking about are orbs, right? Or what are they called? Ghost lights, I guess would be the best way to put it. So there are, I received a few accounts, I guess it was last year, it was last year or year before. It all runs together because of the COVID times, right? Like you forget how things actually went down. But anyway, I got a lot of reports sent to me and called, well, not really sent to me, let's say text and called to me of people from the county that we live in that live out near our lake. And they had spotted, now this is, doesn't happen constantly, right? There was a little flap of like 2 weeks or 3 weeks where people were seeing orbs, and I would say softball size glowing orbs out over the water, back in the trees, but it was around the lake. They were seeing these weird things going on around our lake. I never saw them. It never made it into the paper, right? Nothing like that. But I had probably six or seven people that I know in this area, message me and say, hey, I've seen this, or hey, we had a family member see this and I wanted to ask you. And so I remember, you know, talking to each and every one of them about it. And it really went nowhere, right? Like, you don't know, because it's such a strange phenomena that unless you are there and present the moment it happens, the odds of figuring out or actually getting anything to research, especially if it's not, you know, a continuous thing, is slim to none. And so that's where I stored it, right? We had these neat flaps. We get a lot of these folks. We get a lot of messages or a lot of emails that are unique flaps that don't last more than like 2 or 3 weeks. And you may get 4 or 5 stories. We've got a lot more about these trash bag dwindies, right? I mean, these things have grown and it's there. More people are just finally sharing it. So while I was thinking, I guess you could say, about the whole orb thing, I received some more information, and then it just jump started this whole deal. The information that I received was about a town in Norway. It's called Hestland, and Hestland is it's neat in the fact that so much of what goes on there can, I mean, it's almost cookie cutter to what's going on here in Texas, in the Carolinas, the Brown Mountain Lights. There are a lot of similarities, even though they're nowhere near close. So Hestland is a very, it's in a valley there. And I guess you could say, it's not really rural, but I guess you could call it a rural town. So whenever you do a little research, or when you see things, and I'm sure everyone listening is aware that you've all traveled and all been through small towns that are barely hanging on, right? Or they seem like they're barely hanging on. I know here in Texas, especially in West Texas and up through the Panhandle, there are a lot of small towns that were oil boom towns. And when the oil's not booming, the town is dying. And I used to live in a little town like that out west. And it's, in fact, a lot of it burned up in these wildfires not long ago. It's called Ranger, Texas. And, when I was a real small boy, that's where my father and my father's side of the family was from, is out around Ranger out there. And that's what happened to that little town, right? It's an oil boom town. And when the oil boom left and the money left and the workers left and everything was gone, well, it just barely holds on, you know, and it doesn't have anything to offer. So it's hard for big businesses to want to come out there. It's hard for people to want to invest in businesses in there. And, you know, everyone understands how that works. And so that's what happens. From what I've read, Hestland seems to be the same, but it seems to be a mining town. Now, not ever, you know, going to mining towns. It wasn't until much later, like whenever we went to Arizona, that I could actually see that. And I saw that it's the exact same thing. It's just whatever's happening at the time is what helps keep the town going. That seems to be what happened to Hestland. So it's a unique, small, little, they call it, you know, a very depopulated, and it's kind of a depression era looking little town is the way they describe it. So it's really not a shock. You know, it's kind of nothing going on. Everybody says it's, you know, it's a very unremarkable town, right? There's nothing of note except for these crazy lights. Now, from what I've read, it started, I guess you could say, in the 40s. Everything was quiet, decades of all this stuff. Nothing had been going on, right? Like, it really wasn't anything over the top. And then it says that the lights started to appear what they believe a little more frequency. So kind of sparse between then in 1981, which is a strange, right? Like just 81. We don't really hear a lot of dates like that for flaps, but okay. Now, the unique thing too about them is they're different every time people see them. Like every time they're noticed, something's different about the lights, either the color, the size, whether they're moving, whether they're standing still, lends to believe, of course, that there is some sort of intelligence with these. There's enough inconsistencies, right, in the appearance of these orbs to make it believe that it's not the same thing that you're seeing. You're not mistaking something else for these orbs. So there's a lot of things that make you go, where do these things come from? What are they? specific features that you're going to be able to look for in orbs, especially like these. They're always floating. They're always, you know, they're not on the ground. They're not stuck in something. They're floating around. They look like small balls, hence the name orbs, right? They also have the luminosity in these orbs at Hestilin. Very intense, right? So you can find stories of a few flashings and whatnot, but it's a very intense, bright light. People have spotted them that last mere seconds, up to hours of seeing these lights, much like the lights that I'm going to be talking about here in Texas also. Much like the Brown Mountain lights, they behave as if they have some sort of intelligence. Now, what's interesting is most of them, like the closest it seems like they've seen is, say, treetop height, which could vary for whoever's listening to this because of the trees you have in your area. But let's say 40, 50 foot up, you know, something along those lines or further. Doesn't seem like anything's ever happened up real close, you know. They also talk about splitting of the orbs, that people have witnessed the orbs go from one, morphing into two, breaking into other things, which is something we know mechanically we don't have, right? You don't have a plane that just all of a sudden breaks off into other pieces, right? It doesn't work. What's interesting is people have started taking it serious over there. Now, of course, there's naysayers and they say, oh, it's been solved, this, that, and the other. We're going to get into that about the lights we have here, but you're going to see a lot of people. I don't know if it's because it's simple and they just want to laugh, like they've already closed their mind to those ideas and they just want to laugh at anything that might be silly in their thoughts, or if maybe it upsets them, maybe it unnerves them not having an answer to something, right? We all know those people. They have to put a label and an answer to everything, and if it's unexplained, they don't want to know about it because they have a hard time dealing with it. I don't know if that's what this is, what has caused it, but I do know this. A number of researchers and true scientists have all gotten together now and have been researching and looking into these lights to try to figure out what's going on. Now, of course, it's not a huge groups, right? But they're trying to figure this out. Now, of course, beforehand, it wasn't a real big thing. So prior to like 81, when this started, Hestilin peoples never really spoke about these lights. It wasn't public knowledge. It was very well kept hidden. Later on, I would say in the late 90s, right, you know, pre-2000, the late 90s, a lot of conspiracies, people were releasing stuff. As it started gaining in popularity, people started making a point, I want to go check this out, right? This was before anybody had really scientifically, I guess, studied them, is what they're trying to do now. So what the few scientists who had stuck around and had made it something as their little side gig started looking into this a little bit more and noticing, we got to make sure people aren't confusing like car headlights or planes or what is going on. So that's what they do, right? So they start looking into it. They start trying to find stuff out. Now you're going to read both accounts, just like the accounts that I have coming up, that they've solved it. The trouble is the people that claim they've solved it don't seem to really have the experiences that some of the other people claim that they have. I don't know if it's altering itself when it's being studied. I'm not sure what caused it, but it seems to be the same thing in Hestilin as well. Now, there's something that's kind of interesting is there was an investigator, a photographer that was kind of into this stuff from Norway, known Ivar. Ivar starts looking into these things and there's a quote from Ivar, and it makes sense. Said a lot of this in what he believes, and it's probably the people out there, they believe that the main reason that these lights were, I guess, revealed to the world, if you will, were very simple. It was to help the economy of the town, right? People could make money. Villagers could have little trinket shops, whatever it is, and then it could help. Well, that happened, and then it didn't seem like it went anywhere, and he talks about in some of his quotes of how things haven't necessarily worked out, that some of the some of the shops, the collectibles and all that stuff, shops have had to close. And now it's in, you know, you find all these things in the pubs around there. And then, of course, so that could make it kind of scoffed at and not taken real seriously. There's a lot of the things that suffer from the same things that we've suffered from in the U.S. when it comes to strange and unusual sights, especially these ghost lights. So it's wild that this takes place in Norway. And like I said, this isn't the only place. There are places all over the world that are experiencing these crazy ghost lights. Now, there's a lot of other, like I said, stuff that you could dig into with this. I mean, you go back, there's a thing, Dr. Erling Strand started a research project called Project Hestelen. And I believe it was the very first one ever of really obtaining all the information he could about these lights. He started that back in 85, okay? Then, of course, the government gets involved over there and they start a whole nother program. And it's the interesting thing about the new program that they had started to study these lights is they want to bring in scientists and they want to bring in research students, right? Students in the local schools and colleges that are going to do their research about this unexplained thing. What's the best thing to have them do? Let them work together. Let everybody share their information. And I don't understand for sure if that's what's going down, if they have like meetings, right? Or if there have to be groups that you're elected to. I don't know what it is. I do like the idea of that. I do like the idea of being able to get legit, you know, trained scientists and hobbyists and students and researchers and everybody and all learn from each other. That's the way it should be, correct? I mean, that's just how it should happen. And it seems like that's what they've been doing. And now, of course, they're trying to use more technology. They're putting the effort into this, okay? It's something that I wished we would do more on some of these other lights, you know, a group of scientists that might take it a little more serious. I don't know, but you're going to find it interesting and you may end up wanting to feel the exact same way. Another cool thing about these lights that I have found here around Texas, and we've talked about some of these in the past. We brought up Marfa. We've talked about Bragg Road. We're going to touch on a few people having sightings there. The greatest thing about this is you too can experience this. Okay. You can go to these places. It's not off limits. You can go. Now, there's one I'm going to touch that you're not going to get in trouble, but the police are going to come ask you to leave. That's real close to where we're at. But it was something that anybody can go experience. Like, not everybody, you know, you're not going to be able to go to Mount Shasta or you're not going to do a, but anybody can drive to these roads and park and witness these lights. Anybody can go to these areas, pull off the side of the road, and just be in the area and take a chance. This is the easiest thing you want to go check out. This is the easiest thing to go check out. And more than likely, you're going to have something strange. Now, we've talked about this, and people will talk about it, and older people will talk about it, right? Like the older generation will talk about what's called will-o'-the-wisps or wood wisps. Those are like what's seen in the forest, right? Seen in swamps, all of these fey areas. And that seems to be, over the time, what we believed it was, right? That these are certain fey creatures. It's what these orbs would be. So you jump forward. We're going to talk about the Marfa lights. Now, I've been to Marfa. I've never got to see the lights. My father has seen the lights whenever he was younger. I've never seen them, but we never made it a point to go out there. I don't remember being in Marfa even when it was dark. You know, I just remember traveling through. For those of you that don't know, Marfa's out in West Texas. It's a pretty good little clip out there from where we sit. And it's in Presidio County. It's in a desert, all right? Part of, I believe it's the Chihuahuan Desert that comes up, is what they call that whole area. So when you're looking out into the whole mountainous areas of the Davis Mountains and you start getting in out there, there's another little mountain range out there. And Marfa sets right in that general area. What's interesting about it is Marfa was founded, I believe 1881 or 1882, 83, somewhere right around in there. And it was a water stop. That was one of the main things, is a little town popped up around water. If any crazy Westerns that you've seen, you have to imagine, you know, maybe you've never even seen a Western, punch it up, the whole idea. That's a big deal. When you're talking about traveling, of course, like this, especially in Texas, as you travel west, as you start making your way that way, imagine being horseback. It's an important thing, right? Water, period, is an important thing. But when you're riding horseback in the middle of the desert, it's a very, very important thing, because it's a very inhabitable area, or inhospitable rather, not a place to live. It's a rough, you know, we've all, I imagine the outback. I imagine a lot of places much like this is, it's hard scrap back in the day whenever you decided to put a place in. Not so much now. It's neat. There's a lot of historical stuff around Marfa. There's little artisan shops and like art shops. If you've been to Santa Fe, New Mexico, the way it's kind of artsy, there's a lot of art stuff like that, kind of like Cloudcroft, New Mexico. There's a lot of that little stuff sprinkled all through Marfa as well. It's a very interesting place. I urge you to go check out any of it, right? But that's not what made Marfa famous. What made Marfa famous were these lights, these mysterious glowing orbs that people would see out in the desert. There is, oh man, so many, right? So many, I mean, like so many encounters that people have had out there that you, there's no way to even keep up with it. Now I will tell you straight up what people have talked about. That people say it's headlights. You're going to realize it's not headlights. Okay. When I finish telling you this, you have some experiences of, or listen to these experiences and all that, you're going to realize it's not headlights. That would be the easiest way to explain it. That's not at all what it is. So there's a little road or a little area out there called Mitchell Flat. And that is in this area that these orbs kind of hang out in this whole spot, in this little mountainous area. Now, the orbs, just much like in Heselden, they come in different shapes. Well, not shapes. Let's say sizes, rather, of orb sizes. But the colors, again, vary. People have reported seeing white lights, red lights, yellow, I believe. I know for a fact they've seen blue, pink, a pink lights they've, recorded. Now, again, that could be, we're going to keep it open, could be a lot of stuff. I see color differently than you. A lot of other people, you know, colorblind. It may be a white light. You just may perceive it as something else. I don't know. But to me, with it jumping the different colors and it being distinct. Now, what I have named off could be, are those headlights and taillights, Cam? Yeah, those are the same colors. My question is this. Would you notice it at distance? Can you notice it? Now, I know that headlights have like a blue tinge. We've all seen them, but they're not blue, right? It's not like a bright blue light is shining. Same with the pink, the whole thing. But who knows, right? We'll just leave it at that, of the whole deal. Now, may people have seen them flicker, flash, twinkle, if you will. Seen them even just a steady glow. And they've also seen them setting still. They've seen them moving in flat lines, jumping up and down like a heart rate monitor. Everything you can imagine. The thing that I find fascinating is they see them changing speeds, starting, stopping, merging together, reappearing, disappearing. You would think on a highway, every now and again, you get a fast one, right? When you see cars moving, but there's usually a consistent flow with a highway. That's not why these orbs are moving. They're not moving with some sort of consistency. That's the problem, is when you look on a highway, there's a consistency, not with these orbs, none of this with these orbs, right? You go through it. So there's a fella there, a local fella who's been quoted multiple times. His name is James Bunnell, and he's talking, and I so quote him as well of what he says. He says, and he lives there. He is a Marfa resident. Says, you might just see mysterious orbs of light suddenly appear above desert foliage. These balls of light may remain stationary as they pulse on and off with intensity, varying from dim to almost blinding brilliance. Says, then again, these ghostly lights may dart across the desert and perform splits and mergers as well. Light colors are usually yellow-orange, but other hues, including green, blue, and red, have also been seen. The Marfa, he calls them mystery lights, usually fly above the desert vegetation, but below the background mesas. So not, again, super high up. See, that's the wild thing. They're close to the ground. Now everybody's, oh, that's ball lightning, that's static electricity. No, that stuff doesn't have a mind of its own, right? That's not how this works. Another interesting thing about it, if you follow Native American folklore and stories that were received from the natives in this area a lot of them, I have to safely assume, were Apache. That area of Texas, Comanche and Apache, but, you know, especially Apache was more desert natives, I believe, in Texas. The Comanches kept to the grasslands and all that because they were horseback, right? And the stories, at least what we were always told, is that that's kind of the where the dividing line was, because you want to understand, like, real, what real warriors and real, like, combat like that. Look up Comanche Indians. They're... It's ridiculous. Those guys were unbelievable. The horsemen, the whole thing. So, yeah, you want to read up some really wild stuff. Texas has a real wild history, of course, with the Native Americans and all that because of the Comanche. But I believe it was the Apaches that lived out in that area. But they have a lot of history, oral traditions and whatnot of the same thing happening in and around that desert area where they talk about these lights. You go back into the 1800s, again, right around the time the town was started. 1882-83, I believe, there was a fellow that owned a ranch out there, last name of Ellison, and he had even talked about, while driving cattle through a pass out there, that he had seen glowing lights, and he assumed that they were the campfire of the Apache. That's what he thought it was. Oh, I see him out there. That's it. Later on, he went and investigated. There's no campfires. He went where the lights were. There's no campfires. Not only is there no campfires, there's no evidence of anything even being there, right? It's like, oh, I didn't even see something. Like, I thought people were over here. There's no evidence of not only fire, there's no evidence anything was over here. So after that, it, like everything else, it starts picking up. Now, he may have not been the first. Of course, we know he wasn't the first to notice it. He may have just been the first to voice, what's that? Well, then it starts kind of gaining up and building up, and it builds through the whole thing. An interesting thing is Midland, Texas. Out there in Midland, there was an army airfield that was out there during World War II. It was, you know, the same as like Mineral Wells. We had a bunch of stuff going on over there at the base as well. But in Midland, and Midland's not far from Marfa, if that gives you any idea of where it's all at. There were more sightings, of course, around that time in the 40s. Again, kind of strange, right? We had a lot of stuff going on in the air in the 40s in the United States, right? Like, it was very strange. So pilots at this airfield, the reason I tell you that is when they would fly over that area coming back or going from, right? They would land and report, hey, we saw lights down there moving around, zigzagging around. We're not sure what that was. Like, we have no idea. They would come back. They never found out. And they weren't the only ones that discussed it. There were a lot of pilots that had seen that going on. Now, what's very strange is there was not all the accounts, but some of the accounts seem to be where these orbs moved in and had some sort of intelligent interaction with people, certain peoples that reported it. And it's such a wild story. Imagine you go out there, you're ready just to, let's see some lights. It's going to be nothing more than headlights on the highway. If you look up Highway 67 in the state of Texas, look up Highway 67, find Marfa, you'll see where it cuts down through there. That's where I believe they're saying, I'm pretty positive, that that's the lights that they claim people are mistaking for these orbs. The trouble with that explanation is people don't always see them facing the highway. So unless somebody went bananas, right, and got a little tipsy on grandpa's cough syrup and just drove off in the desert and they're Bajan down through there, that's not what they're seeing. And that's, like we've said, that's the easiest thing to explain. So I'm going to give you a few encounters that actually happened. There was a blogger had talked about his family and he that had an experience out there. It says this: after several driving delays and a huge gas shortage scare, we finally arrived in Marfa past dinner time at night. From our child's perspective, Marfa's big draw, of course, are the mystery lights, a Texas version of Alaska's Aurora Borealis. To make things interesting, I bought a professional digital camera and a tripod and took time-lapse images of the Marfa lights from the observation deck where everyone normally sees them. If you look at my undoctored photos, you will notice a red light surrounded by brighter lights. All appear to be around the same size, but what's interesting is that the white lights surrounding the red one clearly have some movement. And for the record, I don't believe there's anything magical or alien related to the lights, but I do find them interesting. Especially knowing that many experts and some documentarians have studied them and no one really knows what to say. And again, that's very, very interesting. Nobody really knows, right? Like they say it's the lights, but people don't have, I'm sorry, the headlights or taillights, but people don't have those type of encounters. They have encounters with something that seems to have intelligence, that seems to be hiding in plain sight. What if it's a coincidence? Because we already know there was no cars, right, in the 1883. Nobody's driving around on Highway 67 in 1883 out there. It doesn't happen, right? Nobody's racing around where the planes flying over to the Midland Air Force Base can't tell what it is. So obviously, it's not lights. But if it's not, what is it? Get a load of this one here. This comes from back in 2003. The reader shares, "My wife, son, and I went to Marfa, Texas in late 03 of July. Just before the darkness dropped in, a white light appeared across the plains at the top of the mountain. It stayed there a few seconds and then went straight up into a clear sky. A lady sitting down from me at the viewing stand said, 'I've been coming here for years and that's the first one I've seen do that.' I watched a green light through binoculars split into six lights and then chase each other. I gave them to my son and he then counted seven lights. We were there for about 2 hours and the moving and different color lights were active and pleasant to watch. My son and I saw one white light split into three lights side by side, then switch up and down, and then they just played around in circles. Some want to say it's lights from cars coming from Presidio, but the natives and the cowboys in this area in the 1880s reported seeing them. Someone even told me that the army went out with radio men and helicopters to find these lights, but the lights were faster and more maneuverable than the helicopters. I don't know what they are, but it was worth the trip to West Texas just to see the lights. Marfa's a nice town and there's a viewing stand where you can watch the light show. Bring your own chair and jacket. The elevation is higher than Denver and gets chilly at night." So there you go. You're going to be up in the hills in the chilly desert of West Texas checking out Marfa lights. Now, again, they talk about the fact that there couldn't be something out there at this time when they saw it, if the cowboys and the locals were seeing it way back then. But it is interesting. I'm not going to ignore this. It is interesting, you know, that there's a stand, there's a thing where people can come and view it. Like Marfa's kind of embraced it. It's part of their thing. But it does make you wonder, why are they out there? What are they playing? What's the lights coming from? Obviously, it's not, like I said, the highway. So there's something there. There's truly something there. So much so that I think I've got Kyle talked into going out there and us actually doing a little video and maybe trying to get some on and talking about it and doing a few interviews to throw up on the YouTube channel, along with some of these others. And when I say some of these others, I'm talking about the Big Thicket, y'all. I'm talking about here in East Texas. We brought up Bragg Road. Now, somebody that I had got to meet through mutual friends a long time ago, just to shake hands. I didn't get to spend any time with him, nothing like that. Just shook his hand. "Hey, pleasure to meet you, sir." Went on, because at the time I wasn't familiar with what the work he had done. And his name was Bob Riggs. Bob Riggs passed away in 2015. Bob Riggs, man, he knew a lot about what went on in the Big Thicket, and he's good. Him and Nick were really good friends, and I need to get Nick to talk about some of the Big Thicket stuff that Bob did. But Bob's released books. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them pretty much anywhere. He released one in 01. I believe it was just called Big Thicket. I believe that's what he actually named it. And he talks about the lights. He talks about these Bigfoot encounters. He talks about a lot of stuff that goes on. And I know that he wrote for newspapers here in Texas. Bob, he was a good dude. I mean, like, this guy loved the strange and unusual, and he was a good writer, right? Like, he jumped in there. So he was obsessed. I mean, it's just plain and simple. He was obsessed with the Big Thicket. And I think it was the Bigfoot idea out there is what drew him in. I'm going to read a quote of his. It says, "The first time I heard of the Big Thicket's wild man was in the mid-1950s as a 10-year-old boy growing up in Sour Lake. My grandfather had been planning for weeks to take me and my older brother Mickey on an overnight camping and fishing trip. Just days before we were to leave, rumors began flying around Hardin County that a wild man wearing no clothes but covered with hair had been seen in the northern part of the county in the dense bottomland forest along Village Creek, the very place that we were intended to go." And of course, Bob starts, you know, researching, and he started way back. Like, I want to say sometime in the 70s is when he actually dove into it. So in his 20s, I would say probably, you know, maybe mid 30s. He actually was investigating over 30 years he spent in that area investigating and all this. He says this, "I'm reluctant to use the word Bigfoot because I can't say for sure that what we're investigating here is the same animal that's seen in the Pacific Northwest." Now, I like that he puts that in there. Now, like I told you, he did a bunch of studies on these Bragg Road lights on Bigfoot and just trying to keep up with everything. Went and did a lot of accounts, all of this documenting. And like I said, if you're interested in the Green Curtain, if you want to read about all the stuff that takes place in the Big Thicket, check his book out. It's really interesting. This is some experiences that happened in this general area. This took place back in the 70s. This person writes, "My brother, my newlywed wife, and a friend of ours climbed into a Volkswagen Beetle and headed out. We were going for the time of our lives. We had lived in Grove, Texas, next to Port Arthur, southeast of the Gulf Coast." Excuse me. Whew. "It only took about 45 minutes to get there, and it was a dark night in October or November. My brother had been before and convinced us to go along because I would not believe him about this ghost road. So we drove the car off the state highway onto a dirt road. When we first got there, it was dusk, so we could still see the dirt road and the tall overhanging trees. We drove down the road until we could not see or hear the highway noise anymore from where we came, parked the car, and waited for darkness. It seemed to take hours. I suggested that we should turn our headlights on because it was so dark, but my brother said that the light from the car would keep the Bragg light from appearing. Just then my brother shouted, 'Look, down there, there it is.' At first I couldn't make it out. Then I saw a small yellow light that seemed to be about a half mile or more away. The more we stared at it, the brighter and closer it came. Then suddenly the color changed to amber and the light started moving from side to side. Now, thinking this could be a hoax and it was either a friend of my brother's or a nearby farmer that did not like people there, I suggested that we put the car in drive and move forward to see if we could run down whoever was carrying the light. But the further we moved, the light moved back an equal distance. We stopped the car mainly in fear that we might run into a tree or something or another obstacle, since we didn't have our lights on. The light resumed its incoming movement until it got to be about 50 yards in front of us. My wife at this time was really scared. I got out of the car along with my brother, and suddenly the light stopped moving. It turned white and was about the diameter of a bowling ball. Then it stopped in front of our car at about 25 yards and shot straight upwards into the sky. This experience has made me a believer in the strange, or even natural things, if that's what this is. Now, I've heard scientists explain it away as being swamp gas, and that may be true, but it was still very entertaining." So right then, the thing seems, this orb seems to have some sort of intelligence, some sort of interaction on this Bragg Road. Like I said, folks, you can go down there, you can park, you can turn your lights off, you can be part of this. Here's another one from back in 2000. It says, "I live only like 20 minutes from the Bragg Light. This truly is a remarkable sight. I've seen it dozens of times. And first off, don't stop on the road. Keep on with your running lights or use no lights if the moon allows it. Stopping only makes you wait longer. Just creep along at the slow pace and you will eventually see it. And when you first see it, it usually looks like a security light on a telephone pole does on an early foggy morning. There's nothing more than a hazy white center and blue on the outer edges. The trees grow together in most places over the road, so the light sort of makes the upper branches visible. You can slow down or sort of stop at this point, and it will usually come closer to you, and the blue part of the haze will gradually fade to red as it gets closer. Then all of a sudden, the entire cloud-like haze will fall in on itself and become a small light, which can be as bright as a car's headlight. However, it is far from being a car headlight, because it will fade on and off, or just cut off and then reappear. Sometimes it will last a while, and sometimes it'll be very short. Since the road's very straight and very long, it can appear to be close, but my friends and I have run down the road at speeds of nearly 70 miles an hour and still have never caught up to this light. I have also seen it very close. I've never seen it shoot into the sky, but I have just seen it go out right as it got to my truck and then reappear behind it. I've seen it up to 6 times in one trip down the road. Each time you see it, you just want to see it again. So when you can get to the end of the road, you just turn around, you try again. You can see it best when traveling in the direction to Saratoga. At any rate, it is very real, and you will not be disappointed if you follow the guidelines I have left. Also, I would not recommend speeding down the road as we did. We only did that because we know it very well. It is very straight, but there are a few bends. One night we saw something even stranger. At about 12:45, we saw the largest U-Haul truck you can rent down there. It was pulled off partly onto one of the two pipelines and where running lights were going. But as we got behind it, someone turned off the lights as if they didn't want to be seen. So whatever you do, be careful. It's the perfect place for suspicious activity. Happy light hunting, and good luck to all of you. That is something we're going to go check out. That's just a few. There's several people, right, that we know. We've talked to Mike. We've talked to a bunch of people I knew. I told you my buddy Daryl out there. Look, a lot of people in and around this area, this is common knowledge. That's what's so great. That's the thing I think is so funny, are the researchers and the scientists and people that want to investigate into this. Go talk to the locals. Go get little tips and tricks like that before you just jump out there, watch a YouTube video, and think that that's what you're going to do, right, that you're going to go solve it. Talk to the people there that talk about this as common knowledge. They're going to tell you the best ways to see it, the best ways to approach it. Then you can study it. That seemed to be what happened here. But the one that I'm going to leave you with is one, if I was aware of it, I forgot it, because it doesn't even feel like I remember it, right? So I must have forgotten it. Literally 2 hours or less from where I'm sitting right now, if you get on Interstate 20, Interstate 20 runs from pretty much the Louisiana borderline, like you're going to Shreveport, all the way out into West Texas before it joins or merges into I-10. And then, of course, if anyone knows, I-10 will go all the way to the West Coast, okay? So you jump on I-20 from where we are right now in Skeleton Studios, you head west about 2 hours. You're going to run into the town called Abilene, Texas, where we joke around. That's where Kyle went and spent some time in college out there. Not a lot, right? Because he hated it. But if you get to Abilene, just north of Abilene, there's a little town called Anson, A-N-S-O-N, Anson, Texas. I used to hunt in Anson. I've hunted pigs up there. I had a pig hunting lease. Had about, it wasn't huge. I think it's like 1,800 acres. Maybe it wasn't quite that much. Maybe it was like 1,500. It wasn't a massive place, right? But it was a pretty good sized spot to go hunt pigs on. And so we'd hunt and run around up in there. So this was years ago. Had a great time. At this time, I still didn't know that this actually went down. As I'm dying from the allergies. Y'all have listened for long enough. You know that's just what happens down here, right? Oak pollen. Awesome. I've been chopping lines of oak pollen. They have lights there. Now, the interesting thing about it is the story behind it. This is the one I told you. If you're going to go look at it, the police are probably going to come talk to you and run you off from the place, because it's at a local cemetery where this light actually takes place, on right off the main road. And it's actually described as the same thing, as a low glowing dim white light. But it's not like what we've talked about with the rest as far as just orbs moving around. This goes like this. The story that you can find will be that there was a woman that lived on this cemetery road, which probably, I don't know if it was a cemetery road back then, who knows, but somewhere again in the 1800s, right? We have to assume in the late 1800s. Story goes that the woman had the two boys, and that it was a very, very cold night out there in West Texas, which it does get chilly, yeah. And They needed more firewood. I don't know if they ran out. So for the story, let's say they were out running low. They didn't think they were going to be able to make it through the night because they were freezing, whatever it is. So the mom goes, hey, this is what we're going to do. Go get some firewood. Now, the story takes a really strange turn. The story goes that she told the kids, flash your lantern 3 times if you encounter any trouble. Right. Now, I've also heard the story told that the children, the two boys, didn't have the lantern, that the mother had the lantern and she was going to swing it or flash it or do whatever so that they could also easily find their way home. So there's 2 different ways that you can tell that, you know, this story gets told. Either way, the outcome is the same. Either way, the mom sees the flashing light, whatever it is, goes to find the boys, and the boys are dead. The story goes that someone had murdered her children out there. Why they'd be waiting around in the dark and the cold to just kill 2 boys is anybody's guess. So it sounds like maybe it could have been the other way. The boys were lost. Maybe they died from exposure. Maybe there was no boys. Who knows? But the story goes that what light you are seeing moving out around the Anson Cemetery on these Anson lights is her spirit still being here, taking her lantern light and moving around. Story goes like this. Here's you an account. I first heard about the Anson lights from an old history teacher of mine. He was known for tall tales, so I didn't really take much notice. But about a year later, I started to hear stories from everybody and reliable people also, like my minister and my aunt and other family members, about these lights. Well, one night a friend and I went out there. We went to the cemetery and we flashed our lights just like the legend says to. We waited a little while until we start to see some lights in the distance. At first, we thought they were headlights, but then they started to change colors and bounce all over the road. We got out and we started walking towards the lights. It was weird because we couldn't catch up to them, and yet they didn't get any further away. I am now a firm believer, and I will be returning to the lights. Another account says that I live in the boring city of Abilene, Texas, and I too have seen mysterious lights in this town of Anson. Since Abilene is so boring, most of the high school guys have to find their kick somewhere else, and that's where this story comes in. I first heard about the lights a few years back and managed to get the courage to make the small journey to see what all the hype was about. If you want to know the dates on this, this was back in 2000, folks, 22 years ago. Says I can still recall the first time I ever pulled onto the long dirt road next to the dark cemetery. I was scared as hell. As we made our way to the deserted crossroads, tension was running high among the group. As the myth tells, we flashed our lights and then we waited, but not for long. Shortly after turning off the lights, we were slowly approached by a zigzagging light in the formation of a flickering lantern. The light slowly made its way down the road about a quarter mile, where it stopped in front of us about 100 yards and then suddenly disappeared. We were all in shock and pretty much horrified by what we had just seen. We quickly drove down the road to see if we could find the source of the light, but we were unsuccessful. Now call me crazy, but I then volunteered to stay at the cemetery with a friend as the rest of the bunch went to the end of the road to try again. We both hoped to see the light and uncover the mystery. It wasn't long until we saw the guys flash the lights and then disappear. After waiting around 15 minutes and scared out of our minds, we started towards the car. About halfway to the car, the others began to honk the horn and flash the lights without warning. Not knowing what was going on, we were soon met and picked up. All of the guys had horrified, pale looks on their faces. We later found out, as the two of us waited, the others spotted the light appear and dance about 10 to 20 feet above our heads. Totally freaked out after hearing this news, we drove back to Abilene too soon to make the trip again. And ever since then, the guys and myself, well, we've been believers of this. This is honestly a true story, and I urge everyone who reads or hears this to make the trip to Anson and check it out for yourself. Now, folks, that is what I wanted to tell you. Be careful. The police do follow this. It is a main area. It is a main thing. They're going to tell you to leave. They don't want people out there, you know, and they have to, right? They have to just stay on the whole thing. So, I mean, if you want to be on the up and up, you might want to hit them up. You might want to, you know, send them a message, call them, go, hey, we're going to go down there. We want to check that out. Is there something we can do? Try to be on the up and up in the whole thing. Most of the time, if you work with cities and law enforcement, they're happy, happy to work with you and just let you go check this out. This is another one of those things that I'm going to be taking Big Fizzy, and I might take a little Fizzy, and we'll go out there and check it out. We'll go see what we can do, what we can capture, who we can talk to. We might, you know, get a load of this. We've got three sources of ghost lights right here close. We'd be crazy not to go check it out. Folks, if you have any crazy ghost light stories in and around your town, well, first of all, go check them out. And if you have checked them out, email the show, call the show. I want to know. These ghost lights are fascinating. Something along these lines that each one seems to hold something the same. There's a thread there, right? And we just need to tie all that together. And speaking of tying it together, I'm going to tie this one together. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to pick Mr. Filson's brain. Try to get him to go out there with me. We'll scare the life out of one another. Folks, stick around. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Ghost orbs, folks, or will-o-wisps, or whatever the heck it could be.
They go by lots of names, right?
And we've got a lot of them here close. Like I said, now we're going to try to talk Mr. Filson, and I'm sure it's not going to be hard. We're going to have to go to Anson, which I was... Did you remember ever hearing stories of the lights at Anson when you was even in school out there? And I know this is way back in the day when you was out there.
No, I didn't. In fact, I didn't know about it till you told me about it.
That's me. That's me, as I didn't know about that. Now, we've talked about Bragg Road and Marfa. If you're from around this area, and when I say from, I mean like born and raised whenever we were, everybody knows of the Marfa lights. That was one of the things, you know, it was just kind of one of those deals. Everybody always talked about the Marfa lights. So that's a little bit more of a haul if we're going to go out there.
Yeah, that's pretty far from here.
You know, that'll probably take 5 hours or so to get out there to that. But as far as Anson, we can be there in 2 hours. Pretty much the same thing for Bragg Road. We can probably be there in 2 to 3 hours.
And much like I didn't know about the Anson lights till speaking to you, you were giving me the directions or the whereabouts of Reaper minis over there in Denton. And I looked it up on the map. Then I was like, tell them? You know, like 400 yards from there is the old Alton Bridge, which is the Goatman Bridge of Denton County. So I was like, hey, we should do a 2-for-1. We can go check out the bridge, and then we can go to Reaper.
Yeah, we'll do it. Right? So, yeah, we're going to definitely have to do some stuff because we've got a lot more stuff planned for YouTube coming up. So we might as well go shoot a few videos out there and all that.
Right.
Got a lot of video on to do this summer, which is another good thing for the weather. But, yeah, look, ghost lights, that stuff's wild, and it's everywhere. Like we've talked about the Brown Mountain lights. If I go up there again, we're going to have to get with Micah. We need to go up there and check those out. But it is weird. And like I said before, if y'all have stories of any ghost lights around your neck of the woods and any experiences you've had with orbs, any of these things, make sure you send them to us, all right? ExpandedPerspectivesYahoo.com. Write that down. Send it in that way. You can call the phone number.
888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD.
Yeah, there you go.
You can tell it to us.
Yeah.
Right?
And if it's really wild and crazy and the whole thing, maybe Kyle and I come out there and do some video and we don't know. Like, this is what we're looking into. So, yeah, this would be a fun thing to show and some really interesting paranormal stuff to get involved with.
Right. Please, we want to thank everybody for listening to us. And if you want to help us out, go over to YouTube and subscribe over there. We're trying to grow that channel. It really helps us out. Even if you don't ever plan on listening to us over there, do it anyways. You'll help your bruds out.
And write a review on Spotify, please.
Write a review on iTunes, on Spotify, wherever you can. I know it seems like it may not help, but it really does help. You'd be shocked. Yeah. It keeps you in that, whatever that crazy algorithm is. It gets you noticed, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Cam, what do you got planned for your weekend? I know it's an Easter weekend. Man. Are you going to be doing some Easter egg hunting with your granddaughter or anything like that?
Yep. We have a big thing. We're having all the family get together at the house, and we're all going to do a big egg hunt and get all the kids over here. But on Saturday, we're going to a birthday party. My niece that used to live in Chicago, her son turns a year old. So we're going to have his birthday party. So we get to go do all that.
Do kids still dye their eggs like we used to? You know, you used to get the little wire thing. Was it Paws? Is that the brand? P-A-A-S?
Man, that's a good – well, because I don't have any little ones, so I would imagine, because my kids, I mean, like, my daughter's 21, right?
I remember you'd always, like, heat the water up, and you'd put the dye in there and stuff.
Did you ever do it with shaving cream, where you did the dye and the shaving cream?
No, I never
and
did
then
that.
You could, and it makes it look like it's kind of swirly and cloudy and all that stuff, too. Yeah, there's where you can put the dye, and you just mix it in there and pull it out with the same little wire. The deal. I was asking somebody the other day, and they didn't ever have it either. And my wife never had one. I know you did because you and I used to talk about it all the time. Those experiment kits where we always talk about the stuff you could buy and create all kinds of like mixing in your beakers.
Oh,
and
like
do all
a chemistry set.
Chemistry set. Like they don't do that anymore.
Dude, I had it. Me and my brother, we had Bunsen burners. We had everything. We were mixing up. So one of our first projects.
Here we go. This is why they don't offer those anymore.
Yeah, I think lots of people burn their houses down. I mean, we were coming up with like severely caustic liquids. I mean, I remember getting like chemical burns because I don't know what we're making. So one of our
breathing it in.
Oh, yeah. Who in their right mind would give a bunch of kids Bunsen burners and they're in their room fires and stuff?
That's okay.
Yeah, flammable liquid.
Hey, you set up at the kitchen table? Like, no, we didn't set the kitchen table. We set at a desk in Kyle's bedroom. You do it in the floor.
I remember me and my brother sitting around thinking, like, what can we do? We got all these different vials of poison. Like, what can we do with this?
Mix it all together and put heat on it.
So we were going to try to destroy these red ant mounds. So okay. We were coming up with chemicals and then pouring it on there to see what would happen. I don't know.
Who thought that was a right idea, right? This is early 80s, folks. That's what we're talking about. This is early 80s fun that we're having here.
Yeah. They don't make toys
total
like that no
more. Madness. No. Kids, but that's it. What do y'all got going on? Y'all got big Easter plans?
We are going to.
Because your boys are older. They don't care about hunting eggs.
Yeah, they're 14. They could care less.
And even Luke, what does he don't care about
Luke's
hunting
10.
Eggs?
He does not really.
If he wants candy, he'll just go get it.
He'll do it because there's candy in there. And of course, who doesn't turn down candy? And some of the eggs have like money in there.
Yeah.
Like we always put like one egg's got like $20 bill in it. So the kids want that. Then go get them a toy.
And you'll find them something fun.
So he'll probably participate, but only because of that.
Yeah. And so y'all don't color eggs.
No, we don't do it anymore. That's what made me think about it. It's like a lost tradition.
And is your mom still doing pysanki?
Yes. Which are Ukrainian, because I'm from Serbian descent. And she does Ukrainian Easter eggs. She's been doing that for years. But
she's really, really good at it.
Russian Orthodox Easter is next weekend.
I got you.
They go by a different calendar.
If you don't know what pysanki is, look that stuff up because it's really awesome. And I remember his mom doing it ever since we were kids, and she was good at it then. But was it your great aunt?
Millie.
That was so bad.
Millie was amazing at it. She was just a naturally good artist.
Yeah, she
was. Like, my mother can't draw or anything like that.
She does great designs.
But she can do pysanki really good. Yeah. But it's only because she's been doing it for 30 years.
Millie did saints.
She could draw. She could paint. I mean, she was just a really good artist.
Yeah, Millie was crazy.
I got a bunch of paintings my dad's done. I need to give you to hang up.
Oh, heck yeah.
Here in the studio.
I still got the bear painting downstairs. Why didn't he do us a Bigfoot?
Man, I tried to get him on that, right? Because, I mean, you're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
I tried to, like, look, I need I'll even pay you.
Yeah.
I want one of, like, the Mothman. Can you make me one?
He just won't do it.
I don't know why. He doesn't seem to want to do it.
Man.
Maybe I can bribe him with, like, tobacco or something.
Oh, for sure.
You just got to find something he likes, and then you can get him to do one.
You know what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Lumi Labs.
There you
go. We're going to hook him up with these. We're going to get him on the right path, and then we'll see how it works. We'll get him to paint us some big feet, maybe paint us some moth, Dwendies.
Trash bag Dwendies. Oh, we got to get the trash bag Dwendies t-shirts made.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? And only people that are in the know will know what the heck that is.
Yeah, the trash bag Dwendies. That's what I'm talking about. That's the next shirt.
Right.
There we go.
Awesome, y'all. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Let's thanks again to our wonderful sponsors like Manscaped. Make sure you go to manscaped.com. I don't have that one.
I got it right here in front of me. Look, he stole the wrong paper. Look, folks, go to manscaped.com. Enter the code EXPANDED. You get 20% off and free shipping. Okay? Look. You're going to love it. Trust me. Go for it. Manscaped.com. The code's expanded.
And microdosegummies.com. And use the promo code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. And don't forget about FelixGrayGlasses.com/expanded. Free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges. That's about all the time we have, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Kim.
Peace, y'all.